I'm kind of slow. That's the other thing. I hate to make a public admission of this, but and I'm also kind of an anal. I have an anal personality. I'm really a detail person in certain respects. And so when I get in a group like this and go through a day like yesterday, it just bothers me. I try to figure out what went wrong or what exactly this person was saying or that person was saying, and so it just weighs on me. So what I'm going to do today is kind of address that in a diversion here in just a second. But basically,
don't sugarcoat it, Dan.
The reason I think I'm here is because we've been working in Southern California developing what I call Marian multi-scale assessment of riparian ecosystem integrity. We're just thinking. And so, basically, all the work that we've been doing, this has been going on for about 3, 4, 5 years now, I think. Basically, everything's being done in the context of a special air management plan. Y'all know what that is, but just to kind of orient you, the objective that the Los Angeles District has put forward for these plans are to develop and implement a watershed-wide aquatic resource management plan, not planning, okay, plan, what we were talking about yesterday, and implement that program to include preservation, enhancement, restoration of aquatic resources, allowing for reasonable and responsible economic development and activities within the watershed. And I'm not quite sure what that part means, but you see it everywhere. Secondly, to establish general programmatic permits for activities regulated under 4.4 in those same watersheds. SAMP requirements, there's a we all know there's a Regal, like 20-year-old Regal, that laid out the requirements for the SAMP. Areas that are experiencing rapid development, heavy permitting activity, active involvement of federal, state, and local agencies, non-governmental agencies. My graphic down here is an indicator that in California there are hundreds of federal, state, local agencies and stakeholders. I mean, another important requirement is coordinate with existing programs in California. This happens to be programs like MSHCP, multi-species habitat programs of some kind or another that are going on in places. And then finally, to develop a defined regulatory product. Payoffs, regulated public gets an efficient and predictable review process, and the Corps gets the capability to look synoptically at waters in the United States within watershed context. Just to, again, give you some context here, we've done this in all the watersheds except for the San Luis Marin watershed, which is the blue one here. The rest, this is San Diego Creek, just for scale, it's about 100 square miles. San Jacinto here is about 800 square miles. So we range from southern Orange County to western Riverside County down to, all the way down to the Mexican border at Otay. The focus of these SAMPs are a single wetland type, riparian ecosystems, which I give a definition of it here. The important thing is that we're finessing the fact that we're not just looking at jurisdictional wetlands, okay? So our definition of riparian is a functional definition of riparian ecosystem. It basically includes everything up to historical alluvial terraces, okay? We include that in our riparian ecosystem. And we're not assessing function, we're not assessing condition, we're assessing what we call integrity. And here's the definition of integrity. Basically what it means is a riparian ecosystem with high integrity exhibiting the full range of physical, chemical, biological attributes and processes that characterize those systems over long and short term cycles. Okay. In addition to that, this is water balance, diverse and adaptive biological community, results from evolutionary value graphic processes. So it's pretty all encompassing definition. Now there's nothing I would love more than at this point to go ahead and walk through the 5 or 6 phases that we have that go into this entire process. But I've been strongly urged by the Eli people that is not what they want me to do. so I'm really struggling with trying to figure out what it is they want me to do. But and I thought, well, yesterday, I'll just wait and prepare my talk, you know, after in the evening, because I'll understand more after yesterday. I didn't understand any more after yesterday. And it actually got more confusing. So I have some observations about yesterday and about kind of the transition I went through last night at about 1 o'clock. Number one, as with all attempts to shift paradigms, we are currently caught in a conceptual semantic vortex. Maybe it's just my imagination, maybe no one else feels that way, but I kind of sensed that yesterday a little bit. Now, it's deja vu for me because I don't know if it was really a paradigm shift, but the process we went through when we tried to introduce hydrogen morphic classification, hydrogen morphic approach to assessment, which involved basically the idea that not all wetlands are the same and you have to develop a different set of tools or a different set of metrics for assessing their functions. When we went through that process, we had the same paradigm, you know, we had the same conceptual semantic vortex as Bill Ainslie. When we went through that process, we'll testify to it. As a matter of fact, Bill Ainslie, I think, is a person responsible for the term vortex or applying the term vortex. The second thing is don't spare this normal necessary step, albeit painful, okay? But you have to be persistent. And the message is it's really critical to be really anal about how you define things and what you call things. And you got to make sure everybody understands what you're talking about. And that was part of the problem yesterday. Observation number two. The integrity of wetland ecosystems depends on physical, chemical, biological attributes and processes across multiple spatial scales, including the wetland ecosystem proper, adjacent upland areas, and the drainage basin, as so elegantly discussed by Barb and Ben yesterday. Okay, you can't look at a wetland and assess it without looking at its context. In my opinion, there's a difference between assessing the functioning condition or integrity of wetlands in a watershed using site-specific techniques and assessing function, condition, integrity in a watershed using techniques that explicitly consider structural characteristics and processes across multiple scales in the assessment. Now, the problem I have is, here's a little diagram or graph that I put together a while back that gives you my kind of impression of different assessment techniques and put them on two XY axes. On the X axis, you got the spatial scale, on the Y axis, you have a level of detail. Sorry if I don't have your favorite technique on here, but basically what I try to show here is that at the site-specific TL, there are a number of techniques, and there's a whole lot more than are on this list, okay? But they go from a kind of a BPJ level, which is I would put the PFC, proper functioning condition method, in, to something like WET, which is kind of, I would call it qualitative, to something like ACM or IBI, which I think are very similar to each other, and then using some kind of a quantitative, probably uncalibrated type of set model, okay? The next thing I say is out here at the regional scale is something like the synoptic approach. Scott Leibowitz's synoptic approach, and Bill, I think, is going to be talking about it a little bit later. But I think that's probably one of the few that's out in that particular area of this graph. And then there's a dearth of information. There actually is very little exists in what I call the reach watershed scale, okay? I would say that an analogy we can think of, or the only one I could really think of immediately was if you go to actual numerical hydrologic models like HSPF, Mike Sheep, distributed, undistributed, SWAT, something like that. They're really up here they could be uncalibrated, but in many cases they're a quantitative calibrated model. Mm-hmm. Okay, and an essential part of these models is the routing of water through the watershed. Okay, that's what's different between the ones that are at the site-specific scale and the ones at the regional scale. So, but I don't think there existed up to 5 years ago a technique that was at some lower level, okay, for this watershed reach kind of scale assessment. And so basically that's what we set out to do, was to develop a simpler, more rapid assessment that could essentially route the components and the processes of a watershed and have an impact on how you assess wetland functions. Okay? So the conclusion I come to after thinking last night was the steps for guiding compensatory mitigation in watersheds needs to provide explicit guidance on how wetlands and watersheds should be assessed. What I heard yesterday, and this is not a slam on anybody, but what I heard yesterday was people, Eric and Cara and Josh, they were doing assessment of wetlands in a watershed context, but they weren't assessing wetlands using the watershed context to derive their measurements of condition. Does that make any sense to anybody? Okay, so there's a big difference between doing site-specific assessment and saying, well, we're doing it in a watershed context, but the only reason it's a watershed context is because you decided to define the boundaries of the area as a watershed. It's a site-specific assessment, okay? So that's, and I think that's a critical difference that I didn't really get being heard talk about yesterday at all, and I really don't see it anywhere in these guidelines. Okay, although in the five steps, we find that if you look at these, I'm not really quite sure what the landscape assessment is. This is maybe one of those semantic things I think I maybe understand. This is not really landscape assessment, this is landscape characterization. I mean, you're characterizing the wetlands or the landscape. But there's three of these five essential steps list assessment, okay? But in no place, in this whole forum here, do I ever hear a discussion of what kind of wetland assessment techniques should be used in the landscape or in a watershed context. Okay, we've basically blown it off. It doesn't exist anywhere. And I would argue that something like we've developed in California, which I'm not going to be able to talk to you about, is, in fact, the one existing method that does what I'm saying should be done. Okay? Sorry.
So does that mean if you told us about it, you'd have to kill us?
No, I think it would take me too long to do it.
Oh. We have to come out.
Oh, well. Okay. Observation number three. There's a good segue. I started, in my search for answers last night, I went back and looked at the paper that handed out to Spadari and Chauvin, and there was a nice segue in there and I'm sorry, I'm just pulling pieces out of there and I'm going to throw them at you. But first of all, they make the statement, number one, recognition of the surrounding watershed conditions is essential to selecting a location for a particular wetland restoration creation. I thought it was a pretty good segue to the point I made for observation number two. They, in fact, they realize that, when you do the assessment, you need to look at the context, okay? But in my search for trying to understand what this question means, okay, I came up with the answer, and what I think the answer is in this little publication. They said, however, regulators and new feed administrators, what are they, we interviewed are suggesting more. They believe that the compensatory mitigation should be governed by priorities for wetland restoration and protection in individual watersheds, rather than by the current regulatory practice favoring on-site, on-site, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that was clue number one. Next, some people agree in principle that watershed-oriented compensatory mitigation is environmentally desirable, but view it as unworkable until formal watershed plans. And that's kind of a lot of the discussion we had yesterday. And as Rich pointed out to me this morning, and again, I'm slow, he said, we talked yesterday about two tracks, okay? We talked about a watershed plan track and kind of a simple track that's just a checklist. Okay, so I'm starting to get it here, okay? Spadari and Chauvin say, we do not believe that formal watershed plans are necessary, okay? Which is what some people said yesterday. I'm not sure if I agree with that, but whatever. That's not important. And then finally, in the in-lieu fee programs we studied, the program administrators and core regulatory staff jointly selected the types and locations of mitigation actions that serve their understanding of watershed priorities for wetland restoration and protection. What they're saying is, in their experience, based upon their interviews, the core regulators and administrators already have or already are developing these checklists that we've been asked here under this question to generate. Okay? Now, if I'm off base here or I just haven't analyzed this correctly, somebody hit the gong, please. Okay, so how much time do I have left?
We saw it. That was it.
Thanks.
Make it stop.
That's okay.
Okay. Actually, that was perfect.
It's subliminal. I now believe.
John, pay attention here. Here's the presentation. Actually, in the next slide, it said skip to slide 54. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a little bit of what we actually did. Okay. Let's see.
Hit the program.
How do I hit this, make this go full screen? Don't worry about the channel. All right. So after I give you my 45-minute presentation on how we do this, this is what we end up with, okay? This is a map of the Santa Margarita watershed. If you'll notice that there are, it's hard to see, but you see little black lines here? Okay, those are what we call local drainages. Within every local drainage is a main stem channel, okay? Along that main stem channel is a riparian ecosystem, okay? When I'm displaying this map, what I'm showing you is the hydrologic index that we generate based upon our magic procedure, okay, to score the condition of that riparian ecosystem. We display it in the context of the local drainage, that is the area that drains directly to that main stem, okay, just for visual purposes so you can actually see the map. So what this map is showing you is from a dark color, red to a dark green, what you're seeing is that in the red, the dark green, and the dark red are indices that are low, relatively low indices, scaling up to relatively high indices. So the dark green areas on this map are showing you areas, local drainages in riparian ecosystems that have high in hydrologic integrity. Okay? This is the map. Everybody talked about maps. Give us a map. This is a map that districts love. Okay? Because it shows them from a synoptic point of view where the high integrity areas are in the watershed. And we give them the same thing for...
You may not be able to do that.
Okay, I'll just...
Here, just go to...
Okay. Here's the same thing for water quality. We use three indices. Water quality, hydrology, and habitat. Okay, and habitat. Okay, so... I'm finally 1 minute... Can I have 5 more minutes? Please.
After what she said?
I'm skipping up to phase 4 of everything that we did in order to come up with, to give you these criteria again. So we have we're developing a watershed restoration plan. The approach that we use, we classify each riparian reach, those are those areas within each of those local drainages. We classify them using a geohydrologic classification, identify the current condition of those, determine appropriate restoration template, estimate relative level of effort, and simulate changes in those based upon the restoration templates we've designed, and then identify priority restoration areas based on selected criteria. That's it, criteria here. That's this criteria right here. So, I'm going to have to move fast, but... Okay, so we basically have, depending upon what watershed we're in, we've developed a geohydrologic geomorphic classification. It's really pretty simple if you know Montgomery or any of the kind of classic geomorphic classifications. We have Zone 1 V-shaped valleys, pluvial valleys, intermountain alluvial valleys, basically, this is on. Is that okay? Here's examples of each of those. Okay, so what we end up with is, and I shifted Washington, I'm back to San Diego Creek now, but what we end up is a map of the geomorphic zone assignments for each of those riparian reaches. Okay, so here's one of the reaches right there, and it happens to fall in geomorphic zone 1, which is a headwater kind of situation. Okay. Next thing we do is we assign to each of those riparian reaches a restoration template based upon its current condition. Okay, we have a natural template, in size template, constrained template, a graded template, an engineered template. And then, as you can see, what we will also do is make, are making basically recommendations, and I can't talk about all this, I can talk for 20 minutes on that, on what we think, if we're going to restore that, what it would look like, okay? And all those restoration specifications are based upon extensive field work and collection of data on channel morphology, channel substrate, vegetation within each of the reaches of the watershed. So then we assign restoration templates. Then we assign a relative level of effort. This is a pretty crude estimate. What we're basically saying is if you just have to go in and do spot planning, okay, we're going to assign a level of 1. Whereas if you have to go in and actually do move heavy earth and stuff like that, we're going to assign it a 10. Okay, so we assign a relative level of effort to each of those reaches. And now what we do is say, okay, what are the criteria that you used, that you want to use, and I think I missed the slide that had all the criteria on it. It's really simple. Let me answer these questions. What criteria did you use to analyze it? Criteria we used are restore riparian ecosystems, okay? And there's 3 or 4 different ways we did that, or ways to do that. Number one was, and the one I'm going to describe here, is what I call the biggest bang for the buck, okay? So what you do is you go in and restore those riparian ecosystems where a little bit of effort results in a lot of lift in terms of integrity, okay? That's the one I'm going to describe. The other criteria are create corridors between large riparian or upland patches, preserve or restore within a relatively pristine sub-watershed within that, okay, and some others. The way how were the criteria developed? We developed it in consultation with the LA district, okay? That's how it was developed. And what I'm doing now is showing you how we actually use these tools to do that. Okay, so what we have here is a map showing change in hydrology index, integrity index, following our simulated restoration, okay? So we go into the metrics, the indicator metrics that we use to generate these indices, okay? And we adjust those metrics through a simulation process. We say, okay, before restoration, this was a value we assigned to this metric, a particular metric that has to do with channels, okay, or vegetation. And we adjust that metric based upon what the restoration template we applied to. Okay, so if it was an engineered channel and it didn't have any vegetation in it before, one of our recommendations would be to, if there's a soft bottom in that engineered channel, to put some vegetation in the bottom of that channel, which they don't like, but flood people don't like. So that would result in a change in one of the indicators that deals with vegetation. So you basically, what I'm showing here is that after we've simulated the restoration, this map shows you the increase in that hydrologic index, okay? So light blue is a relatively low increase in integrity in those restored sites. Dark blue is a heavy or a large increase. So you can see in this particular watershed, you don't know anything about it because I haven't told you about it, but in this watershed, basically this is all part of the coastal plain down here, and these are all these channels through here, the dark blue ones you can see, are all channelized, basically. Okay, so what this map is telling you that if all you're looking at is increase in function or increase in integrity, this is the map. Here's the map again, Molly. This is the map that shows you where to go do your restoration. Okay, but I told you the scenario I was going to tell you about was the biggest bang for your buck. So what we do is we add another condition, or we add the level of effort condition. Okay, and now I'm going to toggle back and forth. This is my last slide. I'm going to toggle back and forth between this one and the next one, and notice how the map changes. Okay, the colors are the same. Okay, they're the same, but in this case we're looking at change in hydrologic integrity divided by the level of effort. Okay, so now I'll toggle back and forth. So look how in this slide, this line is dark blue, meaning high increase in integrity. All of a sudden that changes. What you're seeing here is, again, I'm giving you a different map, but in this case, this map is showing you where you should go to do restoration if you want to get the biggest lift for the least amount of money. Okay? And we developed the same scenario for developing corridors, for restoring particular wildlife habitats, for many other different things. Okay, I'm done.